having that why to actually establish what is it that we're trying to achieve in society. And then from the technical side, being able to look at Bitcoin and actually grasp it from a technical point of view, to give the how, bring those together. And Bitcoin was, you know, as soon as those small pieces like digital gold, and it actually is scarce, once that could fall into place, it was off to the races.
Hello, friends. Thank you so much for coming by for another episode of the podcast today. I have a super exciting guest for me personally today. This is a guy who I have been reading the content of and listening to podcasts on for so many years. This is one of the OGs in Bitcoin. He goes by Bitstein, and very excited to have you here, sir. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Ben. Happy to be here.
So as I mentioned before we got rolling here, I love me a good Bitcoin story, and yours goes back further than most. So I'd really love to hear just your origin story, because I know you came from this more academic side of things, doing your own research outside of the academic path you're in, and kind of finding this new crazy orange coin on the internet that fit all these other things you were learning about. So give us a breakdown of how that went down early in your career.
So I've definitely been around for quite a while now, although at the time it felt like I was very late. So I don't think there's anyone in Bitcoin who doesn't feel like they were late. And I have to imagine even Satoshi thought, I really should have made this sooner. So, everyone's actually early to Bitcoin, but felt late. So my story goes back, I would say, to the great financial crisis, which, you know, had a big effect on me, like many millennials. And that was what inspired me to start learning about economics. And I was lucky enough that when I started asking questions about economics, I was referred not to, a high school classroom or just, you know, kind of run of the mill, New York Times stuff, like Paul Krugman or whatever, but was sent straight to the Austrian School of Economics. So I was thrown into the deep end with Murray Rothbard and such. So from high school on through college, I was very interested in Austrian economics. This was making me think a lot about libertarianism, but also just, specifically, money is a very important topic in Austrian economics. And so that was always a sort of key, piece of the puzzle of trying to get society back on track. And so I was super into that. I was your typical, kind of gold bug type at the time, because that was the only, that was the only alternative. It felt like Bitcoin did exist, but I was unaware of it. Unfortunately, that's a time where, when are we going to adopt the gold standard? Well, I guess everything's going to collapse, and then we're going to all magically decide that the gold standard's a good idea and try it again. It wasn't exactly feasible, and it's a rather negative message as well. And then in 2011, I heard about Bitcoin for the first time. There was a lot of chatter going on about it. There had been like a Slashdot article that I know inspired a lot of people around when Bitcoin, I think it hit a dollar or so. And someone told me about it. And I remember downloading Bitcoin QT. Now it's called Bitcoin Core. Downloading it, turning it on. Nothing was happening. I didn't even know about faucets or anything. So I probably could have gotten tens of Bitcoins and stuff from faucets, but I didn't even know those existed. And then I quickly lost interest in it, uninstalled it, and forgot about it. Other than watching the Mt. Gox bubble that happened that year. So Bitcoin had gone from a dollar all the way up to about $30 and then crashed to under a penny. And I was like, well, that was fun. That was interesting, and going to move on with life. It wasn't something I was paying too close attention to. But then in 2012 is when we started hearing about things like the Silk Road, which, you know, I'm not a fan of drugs or anything like that, but I am a fan of free markets. And so hearing about the idea of free markets online by use of Bitcoin was certainly interesting. But it was really near the end of 2012 was when I learned about Bitcoin from the perspective of thinking of it like digital gold. Like now it was sort of gold that you could send through the internet. And that's, of course, coming from my background, that's all that I needed to hear. I heard a little bit about the cypherpunks as well, which I had previous exposure to because of Julian Assange, WikiLeaks, and Tor, and all of those sorts of projects. But they always tended to come from the sort of civil liberties wing of the cypherpunks. So the cypherpunks, for those who, you know, might not know, that was a group of sort of cryptography advocates and activists and such, and intellectuals from the early 90s who were thinking about how strong cryptography changes how society operates, and they were looking for how to better secure privacy, property, etc., using strong cryptography and making it widely available for use by all people, not just the military. So, but there's sort of two wings of the cypherpunk thought. There's a side that's heavily focused on the civil liberties, and so those are the people who are more interested in the sort of privacy, qua privacy. And then there's the side that's I say side, I don't mean that they're in like they're exclusive or anything, but just two different ways of looking at the problem. And the other side was very property focused, like how do we better secure our property and our ability to freely associate and maintain free speech and secure our, you know, our business and stuff like that. And that was what I had not been introduced to before. So this was through the people like Timothy C. May and Nick Szabo and others. And so all in the end of 2012, I'm getting a big dose of Bitcoin as digital gold. And also this whole opening up of the cypherpunks as I guess it wasn't new, but new for me, way of looking at libertarian ideas and how to sort of implement them in the real world in a very practical sense. And all of this was extremely enticing to me, especially as just such a, you know, idealistic college student. And so I was just immediately obsessed, and that's all I've kind of thought about. You know, it's just been on my mind every day since. This opened me up to the cypherpunks as a whole, and all of the great literature that just I hadn't seen before, and then with Bitcoin, finding an alternative monetary technology that was not pessimistic, quite the opposite, very optimistic. So not only was it better than gold, but it also didn't require a bunch of sort of political activism and all of that to actually make happen. It's kind of a thing of its own, and it can be a truly free market money. And that's what we've seen since, is that it's been primarily you know, grassroots adoption, and it's only now as it's really grown, become something that is picked up by governments on a more kind of proactive level. So seeing that in action, like I said, it's much more optimistic, and I appreciate that, because I want to be hopeful for the future, and Bitcoin has certainly helped create a lot more hope for the future. From all of that, at the end of 2013, I started a website called the Satoshi Nakamoto Institute, which was meant to sort of highlight all of these ideas that had played into what I'd been studying. I guess a aspect of that I didn't bring up was I was a computer science student at the time as well. So, you know, my training is in computer science and software engineering and all of that. And so I've always had a very computer oriented life. I've been on the internet as long as I can remember. I've been on computers as long as I can remember. And so the digital world is something that is very natural to me. I very much am a digital native. And so discovering Bitcoin was something that I was just, I guess I was very lucky in that. I think I was very strongly predisposed to everything needed to kind of make sense of this thing. So from the one side, having enough of a sense of the digital world to understand that actually the digital world is real. It did take me time to understand how Bitcoin was actually scarce. And of course, without that, Bitcoin doesn't actually make any sense. So that did take some time to understand, but it did make sense to me, and much faster, I think, than most, thanks to that background. And then on the other side, the actual why of Bitcoin was already answered completely by my studies of Austrian economics. So most of my monetary theory has basically not changed in the past, you know, decade. A lot of people, you know, for them, they came to the world of economics with a very different view. And so Bitcoin completely shook it up. For me, Bitcoin felt more like a vindication of everything I had learned rather than something that shattered it. There's definitely little things that I think Bitcoin has helped fix up and tune up. But it didn't, like I said, it was more of a vindication of what I was learning. So I was coming into the Bitcoin world already having a strong understanding, or, you know, what I think was a strong understanding for my age, of the importance of sound money and the economics of sound money, and combining that with the technical. So there's the why on that hand, which, you know, any technology is just a tool, right? So it's, you know, I've never understood the I'm in it for the technology kind of mindset, because to me, if the technology doesn't have an interesting end, then it's, you're just kind of, you know, it's frankly, it's mental masturbation, and I'm not really into that. So having that why to actually establish what is it that we're trying to achieve in society, and then from the technical side, being able to look at Bitcoin and actually grasp it from a technical point of view, to give the how, bring those together. And Bitcoin was, as soon as those small pieces like digital gold, and it actually is scarce, once that could fall into place, it was off to the races. So, since then, I've mostly just been a software engineer, you know, both in and out of the Bitcoin world. But Bitcoin has been my main motivator, and what I like to talk about. And so I think I've, done quite a bit of posting over the years about Bitcoin, and try to maintain the Nakamoto Institute as a good resource to help people get familiarized with these intellectual traditions that I think are so important for understanding where we are today, where we're going, and how we can thrive rather than have our lives upended.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would say that Nakamoto Institute website, it's not a good resource, it's an amazing resource. It's, you guys have been, you and Pierre Richard, I don't know if you have like other people posting on there, it's been a little while since I skimmed it, but I mean, you and Pierre's post going back over a decade now, you know, that's crazy. That's a huge accomplishment. So congrats on keeping that rolling. And I know you've been doing podcasts as well this whole time and doing your own writing. So just creating content to help more people walk that path, because I can assume back in those days, like you said, I mean, you were having to search through some deep, dark forums to find any information on stuff. You had to really be passionate about finding it to see it.
Yes. I think it might still be online. There was I started an economics reading group at the University of Texas where I went called the Mises Circle. And we would get together and just read all kinds of random Austrian economics stuff. It was a place to try to get beyond the basics and kind of really dig in, because I wanted to nerd out. And you know, a lot of groups and online content and stuff, it can usually just be geared towards the new person, because you always have to get them up to speed. But I always wanted to push myself further, so we would get into all kinds of fun, you know, deep cuts and stuff like that. And it was there that we really started investigating Bitcoin and thinking about Bitcoin from an Austrian economics point of view. There was some people like Peter Serta had written a master's thesis, and we basically lifted a lot of our ideas from that. We owe a lot to his scholarship. But we were among some of the first, I think, to try to do a sort of strong Austrian analysis of Bitcoin, and I think that has held up well. But it is funny, one of our first meetings when we were talking about Bitcoin, I'm like, you know, trying to get together resources. It's like, hey, you know, hey, we're going to be talking about this Bitcoin thing. If you want to read ahead of time, like, here's where to go. And it's just like it might still be online, but in any case, it was a pitiful list. It was like, here's like a forum. Here's this tiny subreddit that people post about Bitcoin, you know, our Bitcoin or whatever. And here's the white paper. Here's some guy in the media who hated it, so I guess you can read that too. And here's like a one or two academic papers where they happen to talk about it. There just wasn't that much. There's also the Bitcoin wiki. The point being is there was not a lot to work with as far as really understanding what this thing was. And so it gave us the opportunity to have something to really dig into and try to make sense of. And it was, you know, in many ways it's fun to be sort of ahead of the curve sometimes. And I think that was it was fun to be sort of treading new ground, which I think, you know, basically, like I said, I mean, we're all early. So it's like anyone getting into Bitcoin, even today, is sort of treading new ground and trying to really think through something that is extraordinary and very new. And, I'm just grateful that I got to, you know, well, I've gotten to participate, you know, in all these years of discussion and stuff. To me, the ideas are just so interesting. Very, very different back in 2013 than today. It's very easy. All you have to do is go find the Ben Wehrman podcast and Why Bitcoin Only, and you're set.
Any can start a podcast now. It's amazing. We can all...
Yeah. back then, it was very difficult to find good stuff. So. That's also, you know, I'm very grateful for all the content creators like yourself who are helping, you know, get this out, because it's desperately needed. Now more than ever, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's so many just different kinds of brains that we want to open a door to, because back then, like you mentioned, you had a lot of background in a lot of things that I'm sure you look at now, like, man, I'm so glad I had this computer science background and Austrian economics background. So you were able to click really quickly. The vast majority of people out there aren't that. We find it from the number go up, and we spend a few years in crypto losing our money. And then we eventually like find enough podcasts that lead us enough in the right direction that we figure out that Bitcoin is the real thing. And so just having more types of content out there is just so great.
Yeah.
And
there's lots of different people coming into it from different directions. I mean, yeah. I'm not necessarily as good at talking to maybe a Wall Street guy, because they have a particular view of how finance works. And obviously I can dunk on a lot of it, and I can say why I think, like, oh, I think you're right about this, I think you're wrong about this or whatever. But there's also just sort of a language that I can't necessarily speak as well. And so when you have others, you know, you have the Parker Lewis's and guys like him, and, you know, all those people, Lynn Alden and so on and so forth, because they speak that language, they can take the same ideas and actually communicate it to them in a way that makes sense to them, as opposed to typically if I'm saying something to them, it's to, like I said, it's like to dunk on them and antagonize them, and not actually, I'm not necessarily as good at communicating to that audience from where they are, because we always have to meet people where they actually are. And, you know, I mean, like you said, there's so many different people. It's a huge division of labor. And so having all these different people, whether it's, you know, you have the guys who it's like, they just want to talk to blue collar workers to understand. It's like, hey, you guys are working hard, doing great stuff. You need to make sure you get your money saved. Those people have their own way of looking at things. You have the more politically minded people. You have, you know, you just have all that. You have the technical people who are interested in interesting technical problems. And so it's like, well, you know, you want to be able to talk to them and get them excited about a great technical problem for them to be working on and why, and so on and so forth. So many different people. And I agree. It's just, you know, it's actually a good thing that there's all these podcasts, because all of those people can find the right communicator for them.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, and just as a people person who loves the people side and the social side of this whole thing, it's just incredible to see the different ways that people are finding that fixing the money connects to what they care about.
Yes.
Because so few people just like wake up one day and, you know, or just think like, I really care about economics today. Like, it's really a rare occurrence for that to happen, but they don't know how much those economics are the foundation under the thing that they care about.
And yes,
everything. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I agree. You know, the Bitcoin fixes this meme is one of my favorites, and it drives people crazy because it sounds insane to say, oh, Bitcoin like actually fixes everything. And, you know, there's a fun confusion because they take it to mean that we think that Bitcoin itself will directly, literally fix everything. Like if you just, you know, buy some Bitcoin, it magically cures your cancer or something like that. Whereas, you know, you and I know that what we actually mean is that Bitcoin changes the fundamental monetary incentives that will direct people towards better long-term decision-making, which will result in better decision-making and better production around all of these different lines of things. So it's, you know, there's people get really tripped up on that, but I happen to think that it really is one of my favorite memes, and specifically exactly what you're saying, which is, everyone has some complaint in their life, depending on, you know, what their you know, interests and profession and stuff like that, whatever those are. And Bitcoin fixes this is a wonderful way to get everyone tied back to Bitcoin, because obviously, I mean, they're all using money. Very few of these people are, you know, hermits somewhere that don't even touch money, and they just, you know, they're like breatharians in some cave or something. You know, there's not too many of those. People have money and they use money to get the things that they want. They do things to earn money so they can do stuff. They are not free of money. And Bitcoin fixes this is a way to show, it's like, hey, you have all your issues, you know, maybe you don't like the way that something is done. Let's investigate it. So we can actually, it's a good jumping off point for literally anything, because there's hardly anything that doesn't touch money in some way. And so I think it's wonderful for that. You know, I've been able to talk to, you know, anyone from ranchers to, you know, about, you know, land management and food supply and stuff like that, and how money affects that, which, you know, I know you in particular know plenty about. And then, you know, to architects who are frustrated with the way that buildings are built today, to, you know, people in medicine who are not pleased with the medical system, and so on and so forth. You know, basically, everything. So Bitcoin really does fix it all, people. And, you know, Bitcoin fixes this is the meme to help us sort of start uncovering where those connections are and what parts of the monetary incentives can we fix and will we fix because we start adopting Bitcoin.
Yeah, definitely. And what I would just also add on just super generally is that when you hold this asset that cannot be taken from you and is programmed to go up in value over a long period of time, it just gives you this sense of freedom and like a boot taken off of your face. And you can just take a deep breath and actually think about what you want to do as a human being on this earth, you know? And so many people out there are just crushed right now by the inflation that's going on, where yes. they aren't able to just find their natural way. They're forced into some track or another that's not natural for them. Even something as simple as living in a city is not really natural, you know? And you have to do that to be able to make money. You have to get a job in the city. And that's because it's too expensive to live without a job. And so there's so many things that come down to the money and how they affect our lives. And I, speaking of inflation, that is one of the things that I just spam on this podcast, because there's so many people out there that, you know, we talked about how there's so many different kinds of brains. And yes. I think that inflation is a good subject to give these people, because they've gotten enough priming of seeing the prices of all their food going up. They see their rent prices going up, energy prices going up, the entire cost of living for them is going up. And I think this is a really good opportunity for us Bitcoiners to slide in here and try to explain to them, you know, why this is happening and how it's actually fixable. So how would you explain that to a new person who, you know, you see them sitting on the sidewalk, they're crying, they're just like, I can't afford anything right now. Life is so difficult how is this happening in the richest country in the history of the world? What's going on? How would you explain that and why Bitcoin fixes it?
Yeah. Well, I mean, first off, I mean, I see it everywhere, and, you know, I'm incredibly grateful that, you know, I'm in a position where, you know, I feel the sting of food going, you know, up in price, but I don't have concerns about being able to eat. And I know that, you know, ultimately I'm very lucky to be in that situation, and so many people aren't. So it really is just a disastrous situation. But, you know, for that, I think it does depend on who I'm talking to, in particular. Usually there's some cues and stuff like that to work with, but, you know, just generally, you know, my usual thing is just to start is, you know, just to point blank be pointing out that it's like, yeah, that's what happens when they print trillions of dollars. They make each one of your dollars worth less. You know, I tend to focus on the fact that, you know, when you're dealing with dollars or whatever fiat currency, you are dealing in a rigged game. And then, you know, using that as a way to jump into Bitcoin as a non-rigged game, because of its scarcity, because of the fact that you can hold it and don't have to be, you know, in fear of getting debanked, you know, already getting crushed by inflation, and then you say the wrong thing online and suddenly you don't even have a place to put the money anymore. And so it just gets, you know, accounts get frozen and such. You know, to know that you can actively take steps to get out of that is big. And, you know, with that, honestly, it kind of depends on where they are on Bitcoin. Like, where is their skepticism level? Because you'd be surprised at how many people you might say this to, and you'd be like, oh, yeah, you know, Bitcoin's the future or something like that. You'd be surprised how many people out there, they're at least sort of primed to just like, you know, the future is digital. That's just on people's minds. Like, you know, there's been, you know, a digital wave for everything else. So like, why not money? So there's been a surprising number of people I've talked to over the years about such things who just like, yeah, I mean, they don't necessarily know anything about Bitcoin, but they're like, yeah, that must be the future. In which case, like for those people, obviously it's much easier to jump in, because they're basically at that point, in a sense, asking to learn everything. Whereas, you know, other people might be a little more skeptical, or just they don't know anything at all, and they've just heard a bunch of stuff. And then, you know, I'm usually finding myself having to, you know, explain mining, which is an incredibly tedious topic for a new person. I really recommend new people not even really worry about it too much at first. It can kind of just depend on the person, I guess. But the main story is that when you're using the dollar, you're losing. You are playing a game that is rigged against you. Whenever you hold it, it's losing value. Your hard work is getting drained away. And I like pointing out how much more you have to work every single year just to stay at baseline, just to stay at the status quo. You need to work, you know, depending on what numbers you believe or what numbers you actually do experience, you know, at the grocery store and such, you know, you can be looking at 10-12%. And that means you have to work 12% harder every year just to get the same stuff you had before. And with Bitcoin, it's the opposite, because as soon as you have, you know, X percentage of the Bitcoin network, you have X percentage of the Bitcoin network, and people can't take that from you. And so that's sort of the broad story that I like to focus on, but the actual details can greatly depend on what kind of, you know, feedback the people have.
Yeah, and speaking of the priming that so much of the population has without even knowing it, just the fact that Bitcoin has been in the conversation in some sense for, I just double checked, it's 16 years old now. Bitcoin is getting its driver's license. It's a healthy teenager. It's thriving. And we just keep hearing about it on the internet. And so for some people, just getting enough of those touch points of hearing that this thing is still alive, no matter how many times they hear from some media headline that it's going to die or it's going to fail, I think that sort of subconsciously just raises the interest level inside of us, because when things just continue to persist and won't die, no matter how much, you know, negative things you see about them, it just makes you kind of innately curious, I would say. And it's great to see that.
And over the years, especially, you know, more and more over the past few years, but if Bitcoin comes up, there's plenty of times where I end up dominating a conversation, not because like I'm trying to dominate the conversation, but in the sense that I bring up Bitcoin and suddenly just everyone has questions for me about Bitcoin. And so I just, you know, I can't help myself. I love helping people understand Bitcoin. So they just, you know, ask questions, and, plenty of people have seen me in action. It's like, as soon as people have questions for me, I don't stop until all of their questions are answered. You know, no matter how tired I might be or, you know, how late it is or whatever. So people do have a strong interest. But there's also the sort of marketing thing. You know, the classic marketing thing is, you know, you need to see something seven times, you know, or something like that. And then, you know, you kind of get interested because, you know, the first time it's just like, oh, something that exists. And then you hear about it again. It's like, okay, there's this thing. And then you hear like your friend got some Bitcoin. It's like, like suddenly this thing is like very real and entering your life. It's clearly like in your world. It's not just some, you know, faraway thing. And so, over the years, I've always tried to talk about Bitcoin as if it is completely normal, because I want people to see it as such. It might seem like alien technology, but it's a very natural money ultimately, and they should be aware of it. And I would say that people are, when you don't have someone who's just outright antagonistic to it, and even they often, you know, like to still talk about it. They like to be combative about it. But people are surprisingly open-minded. A lot of people will say things like, they might say things like, oh, I just don't know much about that. They have this like it's a sort of weird fatalism of just, oh, that thing passed me by and I'm just behind and that's just how it'll always be. So I think another kind of big thing is trying to hype people up and make them feel like they have actual agency over things. I think that, you know, our fiat world has kind of lent itself to making us feel much more lower agency, because, you know, it is harder to save money. And if you don't have savings, then you can't have as much control over your future. And so you are just, you know, trying to make it day by day in a chaotic world, as opposed to being able to sort of secure a long-term vision. So I think that it naturally makes people a little more lower agency than they ought to be. So there is a need to, it's like, yeah, this, I mean, this stuff is obviously new to a lot of people, but you can learn, you know, a lot of people have learned, a lot of people who know way less than you are, you know, people who are older, people who haven't worked with computers as much, you know, it doesn't matter. Like, a lot of people have learned how to use Bitcoin. You can learn about it and learn how to use it too. So that ends up being another sort of thing. It's like a, you know, just psychological, motivational type side of it, which is, you know, yes, you know about it, but also it's like, you know, you can go buy some right now. That's the other side of it.
Yeah. And just what you brought up there that I really like is just talk about how people have lower agency right now and how this ties back to the money printer we talked about. And I think it's just so interesting once you sort of wake up from what we call the matrix, you know, the fiat matrix of how we grow up just really believing. And I know that you went through the traditional, or I don't even know what to call it, traditional, the fiat educational system. I also did that. I went to a big fancy college and went to my econ class where I learned about how great central banks are and inflation is good for you and everything. And we're all taught how, you know, the government's doing all these amazing things for us. You know, they help us with this healthcare. They give us these free stimulus checks sometimes. So all these great things, you know, wonderful things that make our lives better. How do we connect? Well, I guess, how would you connect that to the money printer itself? And this fiat printing is what's actually creating all this madness. How do people really connect that dot to realizing that by actually eliminating the government from all of these things is how we actually fix it? Because people get really emotional when you say something like there should be, you know, health insurance is a scam, or the healthcare system should not be supplied by the government, because they think, oh, like, we need that safety net. We need something to be, we need the poor people, we need to take care of them with this government printed program. So how would you explain that to people as just being the wrong way of thinking about it, why we need to get the government out of these things?
Yeah, that's, once again, I mean, it this is highly dependent, one, on who am I talking to, and two, how antagonistic do I want to be? Because I also, you know, I can enjoy a really good argument. So, you know, I can be very aggressive with, you know, just like laying on the crazy, just to, you know, get at people. So, you know, it depends on the day for me there as well. So it's both sides. But you know, on the more sort of, you know, charitable side, and kind of more towards how I really think about these things, I guess, like, even that, it's like tough, because it also depends on, you know, I guess one of the big things that I like to get across is just that, you know, when I say that I would prefer the government have less to do with education or something like that, I like to make it very clear that what I'm not saying is that there should be no education, because that's typically the big hangup that people have with that. Obviously, when you're talking about something like the warfare state or something, it's like, I actually do think that we should probably stop having, you know, pointless conflicts and you know, mass death and all of that. And I don't want a replacement for that. I just want it to go away. But, you know, with the things like education, healthcare, et cetera, it's like, for all of those things, I don't think that there shouldn't be any education or healthcare. You know, there should just be poor people, you know, dying in the streets and stuff like that. And that, you know, my actual goal is that I think that we can do an even better job of providing those things. So if you value education, I very much value education. We can try to discuss, you know, what makes a good education, you know, in what ways do you think the public education system is doing a good job? I don't happen to think there's much there, but there's still, you know, some underlying, you know, things of like, if someone thinks it's like, it makes sure at least everyone gets an education. It's like, well, that's a, you know, a, you know, noble, you know, feeling towards it. But just try to discuss, you know, how are those things actually provided for, and, you know, what are the alternatives? And, you know, we could, like, you know, dive into that. But basically, that's sort of a big hurdle, is just getting people to understand that you are not saying that you don't want these services, but quite the contrary. I want those services. I want those services. I want more of those services, and I want better services of that kind. I want more safety and more education and more, you know, good healthcare and so on and so forth. And hopefully, you know, depending on the person, depending on, you know, how well I'm communicating, you know, try to at least get my point across of how I think certain things can be provisioned by a market, what alternative systems would look like. Because for a lot of this stuff, you know, there's a book, Candide, the Voltaire book, and there's a character, Dr. Pangloss, and he's supposed to be a parody of the philosopher Leibniz, but it's like, you know, he thinks that this is the best of all possible worlds, and he kind of describes everything backwards. It's like, you know, see how you know, our legs were made perfectly for pants. You know, so it's like we were made perfect. This is the best of all possible worlds, because look how pants just fit us. And it's like, well, obviously it's the other way around. And when I look at a lot of people's arguments around these things, I sense a strong sort of Panglossian vision. So they sort of think, this is the best of all possible worlds. They have trouble imagining, like, it's almost a failure of imagination to think what we see right now is not necessarily the best way for it to be done. And in fact, it might be actually destructive towards that end. And that is just, it's a very difficult thing to work through. And unfortunately, like, you know, I almost hesitate to even get into it, because, you know, there is, you know, education, healthcare, like, there's all these different things we can get into and go deep, and every single one of them has this exact same problem. So for instance, like, you know, most people probably aren't aware of, you know, maybe how police and protection services were done in this country, you know, prior to the 20th century, and, like, you know, or you know, anything from fire departments to healthcare to, you know, any of these things, other ways that even in history we've seen things provisioned in a way that didn't require, you know, taking a bunch of people's money and forcing it through a central, you know, government to plan it all.
Who will build the roads, Bitstein? Where are my roads?
Yeah, so yeah, and that's of course the classic, and you know, for those people, it's funny, because it's like, at least my understanding in American history, like, most of the roads were private for a long time, and, you know, there might be some arguments as to, okay, well, here are the benefits to having, you know, made more of a public road system, but the point is like, there are other ways of looking at it, and I do think that there's a sort of failure of imagination. I do suspect a lot of libertarian types, you know, they are more focused on talking about why they don't like the government than they are in trying to lay out a positive view of how they actually want to go provisioning, you know, different goods and services that people want. And because of that, it can become it can create you know, a nice social rift, because that does, it's like, oh, you just hate the government. And it's like, well, no, I mean, you're too focused on that as opposed to, no, my problem is the government is bad at doing these things. And so, yeah, that's like a social rift that I think it can be troublesome, especially because, you know, libertarians are rightfully mad, but they're not necessarily the best at communicating, like I said, that sort of positive vision, because their focus is more on trying to get the governments off their backs. To which I would say, it's like, okay, now the government's off your back, what are you going to do? And you also need to have that side of the equation so that you can, for yourself, so you can actually get it done, so you can do the things around you and not let you know, things like the government be a bigger enemy to living a good life than it actually is. Many people can also find themselves self-limiting their behavior because it's like, oh, the government has just like ruined that. And it's like, well, there's still ways of doing things. You know, people like quoting the Hayek thing on money is, you know, finding the sly roundabout way. It's like, there's a lot of sly roundabout ways of doing a lot of things in this world. You know, I think, you know, you can go start a different way of doing education right now. You can go do it. No one's stopping you. And so focusing too much on sort of the negative side, it's obviously extremely important because it is actually destructive to how we're living our lives. They're printing our money away. They're then using that money to effectively antagonize us through, you know, various, you know, government programs and such. But we still live somewhere where you can develop agency and use it if you want. You know, you don't have to have your money inflated away. You can choose Bitcoin. And so, you know, that would be my criticism, not just of the people who I'm trying to communicate, you know, why the government doesn't need to be the one supplying us with healthcare, but also to the people who I effectively agree with, of how can we better think our way through. Like, you're very interested in the meat stuff. It's like, you know, one way to avoid, you know, the problems of government in regulations and such in healthcare is by eating a better diet, even if it stands athwart the government recommendations, because you know that it'll lead to a healthier outcome that reduces your need for those services in the first place. Maintaining a sort of positive and optimistic outlook in the sense of keeping yourself high agency and being capable of making choices despite the given circumstances, I think is very important for kind of everyone involved.
Yes, quite peculiar how the folks following the 7 to 11 servings of grains per day just happen to be not asking questions about this stuff, huh?
the grain brain.
And, and I love how you bring up this dichotomy of what percentage of our energy do we focus on highlighting the problem and really just beating the drum on that in through our social channels, and how much do we just focus on building the solution that we can do without permission? And that's the beautiful thing about these things like Bitcoin, and I would add Nostr to that conversation as well. These are decentralized solutions that have come out of the free market, like you talked about, and they are created in such a way that they don't need anyone's permission. They just work. And yes. So that really gives us a path. And I've been going down all sorts of just dark, deep rabbit holes the last couple of years, learning about how screwed up the system is. And to me personally, just from a mental health side, it's so incredible that we have the solutions right there. And they always come back to the stupid money printer, like we mentioned, and having, you know, censored speech, which is where Nostr comes in. I think those two together are an incredible combination. And it just makes it easier to know that I don't need to try to inform everyone in my life about every one of these terrible things that is a result of fiat money. I can just tell them about, you know, the solutions we have, because for most people, they're just looking for solutions. They don't need to know the disgusting underbelly of the beast. You know, they want to fix their problem deep down, I think. Yeah. Once you just dig through and get them to eat more steak, like we mentioned, so they can start thinking solution oriented. But how would you, I mean, you kind of just alluded to it there, but do you think that the Bitcoin community, who those of us like myself who just love looking at all these other things out there, another one I'd mention is Daniel Prince. He's one of my favorite Bitcoin podcasts, because he's going into all sorts of other stuff on the Once Bitten podcast, which I think is important for us Bitcoiners to understand. But do you think that, how do you think we should balance that? Do you think we should really be just pushing the message of, you know, these are the solutions, this is how we actually fix it, and that is, you know, what would be the best course forward for the majority?
Stepping back, you know, I was saying how with the you know, back in the day, you know, imagining going back on the gold standard or something like that, how bleak it was, because it's like, oh, we just have to like wait for collapse. There's like a problem where if you're in that world, you have to like, you know, pay attention to the politics of the day. Even today, I mean, the amount of people who sit around and like want to look at the color of, you know, Jerome Powell's tie as some kind of signal of, you know, where the economy is headed or something, that's no way to live, in my opinion. Like, I can't imagine having to be that person. And so, but when you're dealing with something where the only solution is effectively some kind of political solution, because I don't suspect that the gold standard was going to be reenacted because of a mass awakening by the populace of like, hey, let's all hold gold, but through, you know, actual, you know, measures to rein back the Fed and stuff like that. Well, suddenly you're dealing in a game where you have to convince everyone. You can't just have like one guy decide, oh yeah, hey, let's audit the Fed and have it magically start happening. Like, you have to get, that's like, it's a big mess, and there's a lot of like consensus you have to do in the political world to make those sorts of things happen. Whereas Bitcoin, the exciting thing was, this thing is just out there, it works, and you can benefit from it prior to everyone else getting on board. So obviously, holding on to it for a while is going to make someone, you know, their number go up. But you can get that, you know, like, it's not like number doesn't go up until literally everyone gets on board. And meanwhile, even during that time period, even when number is not going up, you know that if you're holding your keys or whatever, your money is safe and sound. You know, it might go up and down in value and so on and so forth, but you know that it's safe. So the mindset is a much different one, where it's like, you can view yourself just being able to act as an individual in your self-interest, in order to improve your life. And Bitcoin has been improving people's lives, you know, since it's come out, and more every day. And I think that's a wonderful thing, because it's much easier than trying to engage in, you know, political stuff. And that's not to say that there are no, you know, political games that need to be played or anything like that, but just that for something like money, you don't have to. Like, you know, there's a lot of things that we could, you know, sit around and say politics is kind of necessary, but with Bitcoin just works, and so you can just choose it. Now, moving on to the sort of question of, should people be focusing on, like, you know, going down the rabbit hole, or just focusing on the solutions or whatever? I would say it's a little bit of a false dichotomy, just in the sense that in order to have a solution to something, you do need to know what the problem is, and have a good enough sense of that problem to be able to fix it. Now, for some people, their problem is, you know, that they recognize is as simple as the food at the grocery store is getting more expensive every year, and Bitcoin is a number go up technology where, broadly speaking, every single year my purchasing power is increasing if I hold it. And for them, they might not even need to go further down the rabbit hole to have found the solution they needed. And that's great. But of course, at the same time, those people might have other things that they aren't even aware that they're facing, such as the risks of debanking. Obviously, there's been wonderful pushback now on sort of Operation Choke Point and Choke Point 2.0 type stuff. It's almost surprising to me that people are surprised by that. That Operation Choke Point is such a shock to them. I thought it was so interesting watching, Mark Andreessen. He was the one who, I think him on Rogan was one of the things that really got the message out about just how serious this is. And yeah, I thought it was interesting that people just weren't that aware of these things going on, because I've been on the internet long enough. I've been seeing that this stuff was going on. And it's not until something like the, Canadian truckers, it's a great example of people getting debanked for saying the wrong thing, doing the wrong thing. And if those people, you'd want those people to be able to learn those issues without actually having it happen to them. You want to learn things the easy way, not the hard way. And so going down rabbit holes and such, and having an open mind in the sense of wanting to learn more about the world around you, can open you up to a better understanding of all of the types of risks and uncertainties that you face in life, so that you can do what you can to patch them up before you need to worry about them. And if you are learning something the hard way, going down a rabbit hole is going to allow you to, hopefully, assuming you're going to good sources. That's obviously there's great difficulty today finding good information on things and knowing what's real and what's not. But assuming the good path here, having that knowledge now actually helps you figure out, well, how do I get out of the hole? I don't really think that they're mutually exclusive. I guess you're sort of asking partly in a sense of like a sort of branding thing online of like, should I just be talking about Bitcoin or should I talk about all of this other stuff as well? And I think that depends on the person. I used to post a lot about carnivore stuff, and all the time people would tell me like, how this has nothing to do with Bitcoin and so on and so forth. And the funny thing is then on the other hand, I'd get all these messages from people saying, oh, thank you for telling me about it. I've improved my health in this way and that, and so on and so forth. That you almost can never make anyone happy, everyone happy, because if you only talk about Bitcoin, then you get the people saying it's like, you don't talk about anything else. And then as soon as you talk about something else, it's like, but that's not Bitcoin. Okay.
Exactly.
Like, stop trying to make this just, about other
absolutely.
Things. You know, stick to Bitcoin. So there is kind of no winning with people sometimes. But I think it just depends. I think, coming at it with an honest point of view, like I don't think, if someone wants to correct me, I'd be happy to see where I could improve. I don't think that I've ever, tried to make it as like, oh, you are not a Bitcoiner if you don't, eat a steak every night or something like that. I don't think I've ever actually said that. It's just, I do happen to have other interests as well that I like to share. That being said, for me, I think that there's lots of different topics in this world that I really like talking about and learning about. But for me personally, I think that the one that I have the sort of most leverage in is communicating about Bitcoin. And so I try to just stick to that these days. That it's not, other people are going to have different things. For me, I find that sticking to Bitcoin is sort of the most important, because any given topic is going to be one that can you know, cause a big flame war and people to get upset with one another. And for me, I prefer, you know, let's just stick with the one and try to push it all the way, especially considering, as we discussed, Bitcoin fixes everything. And so if I can get the Bitcoin message out and help people with that, that's going to help a lot of other things downstream anyway. So I think it just depends, you know, different people have different interests. I think for me, you know, I just kind of stick to Bitcoin. It's my favorite thing to talk about anyway. So, you know, I stick with that. I don't think there's anything wrong with people talking about other things. I do think that they should probably, you know, if you say that you're literally not a Bitcoiner because X, that's probably an incorrect statement. So people should be mindful. And I think that people should, you know, I think on both sides, people need to have, you know, charity and, like, you know, you know, not assume the worst in people from either end. But yeah, I could make the argument for both sides there. And I think it's just going to depend on someone's strengths. So I think someone like, you know, Daniel Prince, you know, with his podcast, that's actually kind of become his brand. And I think it's a really cool brand. I think it actually, you know, far from like, oh, you're not a Bitcoiner if you don't X. In many ways, I see his podcast and such as being the opposite, which is celebrating the diversity of Bitcoiners. I get to meet the most interesting random people from all around the world, from all kinds of walks of life, from all sorts of backgrounds. And those people are naturally going to have a lot of different beliefs about the world. And to have then a sort of forum where you can be tolerant of just all the weird ideas that people are going to have, knowing that, like, most of these are probably like silly. Maybe there's one of them that's not silly. Maybe actually a lot of them are not silly, but it actually takes engaging with them to sort of figure that out for yourself. And having a space to be tolerant about that, I think is super valuable and a great way to celebrate just how global and decentralized Bitcoin is. So for him, I think it's a great brand for him to sort of find that niche of, like, you know, there's a lot of plebs out there, and those plebs, they know a lot of different things about a lot of random things. And I kind of want to bring that to the forefront. I think that's a great thing, and celebrates the Bitcoin community and what it has to offer. So, you know, different people are going to kind of find their niches. Mine is being, you know, one half bulltard and one half sort of educator.
Yeah, it's the most hilarious critique of Bitcoin is that it's a cult, because the more of these people you talk to, you realize every single one is completely different, and we all somehow disagree on every single thing.
Oh, yeah.
Outside of Bitcoin.
Oh, it's some cult. It's I mean, sociologists should be studying us then, because this is a very unique cult where we agree on nothing except Bitcoin, and even then we don't agree, because you know someone's wants OpCTV and someone else thinks that they're a shitcoiner for wanting that or something. You know, it's endless battle, but there's also, you know, at least I think among most Bitcoiners there is a large amount of mutual respect and openness and kindness. And I happen to think it's a wonderful, beautiful thing. And I think people should try to, you know, we're on the internet. You have to get used to coming across ideas you don't like, ideas you disagree with, and knowing how to just, you know, let things, you know, roll off your back. But also, you know, have an openness. And if someone has an argument to make, you know, hear it out and see if there's anything to it. And don't necessarily be too dismissive too quickly.
Yeah, definitely. And I thought it was so funny how the perspective you had on my question earlier about what percentage do we, you know, go this direction or that direction, that absolutely is a projection of just my own inner battle all the time. It's like, how many episodes do I bring on to talk about, you know, these totally different things when, you know, would it be better for people if I just focus on Bitcoin? But like you said, you know, there's such a diversity of different types of people. And what we said way earlier is how Bitcoin just gives us the freedom to do what we want to do and talk about what we want to talk about and you know, spend our energy on what we want to. And so I know a lot of people out there are going to have this inner battle, like inevitably. Like, what do I actually do with all this freedom I have now? Oh, I'm going to go down a carnivore diet rabbit hole because this seems to be a common thing in the Bitcoiner circle. So let me learn more about that. And you find out, oh my gosh, I feel so much healthier and amazing on all this additional mental brain power from eating all this steak. And the more freedom that you sort of collect in your little, what was that game? That Katamari, that game where you're just like this ball, just gathering up all this stuff over time. And you just, it's hard to not want to share everything all the time. It creates a sort of madness, but it's a beautiful madness of people who have hope for the future. They do have a singular North Star of how we solve that, at least a big part of it. And it's just a big, crazy community of crazy people, which I love. I don't want to hang out with normal people anymore, that's for sure.
You know, and I think also we have to recognize, it's like, we were right about Bitcoin. And that means that basically everyone was wrong about money. Money being, you know, a foundational part of civilization itself. They were wrong about that. They were completely wrong about that. And so it just doesn't actually strike me as crazy to think, well, you know, maybe they're wrong about a lot of other things too. And a lot of important things too. You know, not just frivolous things. You know, it's you know, one thing to say is like, oh, you know, they were wrong. Like, you know, actually, this sport is much more fun than this sport. You know, there's sort of like frivolous stuff like that. No, people were wrong about like fundamental issues. And so, you know, there's also something that I like about the Bitcoin plebs is, it's sort of my favorite part, is that where it's ultimately coming from. And, you know, sometimes people are not necessarily good at expressing this, but I think they would all agree with what I have to say here, which is, I think that at its heart, the Bitcoin pleb kind of mindset is effectively one of humility. It's because it came out of the idea that you have all these influencers, and the pleb looks at the influencer and just states the obvious for that person, and also to themselves, that's like, I don't speak for Bitcoin. So, you know, when you say, you know, oh, you're not a Bitcoiner because you don't eat steak, well, that's you speaking for Bitcoin. But the pleb mindset is just like, well, no one speaks for Bitcoin. I'm just speaking about Bitcoin from my perspective. And so there's that humility of recognizing that, you know, we are not in control of this thing. We are just trying to figure things out. And there's also the humility of recognizing that, hey, it looks like we were totally wrong about something. I am willing to say that I could be totally wrong about these other things that I believe. And, you know, when you, if you can be the type of person who can have the capacity to change his mind, because better ideas come about, you know, that takes humility. And I do clarify, you know, to have the capacity, because there is sort of, I'm sure you've noticed this, there's this like thing online where if someone does change their idea, like their belief, everyone like cheers them on and calls them like how great it is because they changed their mind or whatever. But to me, it's like, that's only good if they're now right. You know, if you just came up with a worse idea, I'm not going to like cheer you on because you went from like bad idea number one to bad idea number two. So I think, you know, it's important to have the focus on truth rather than simply, you know, being a contrarian for the sake of being a contrarian or something like that. But, you know, I love the whole pleb thing. I mean, I view myself as a pleb. Some might like argue, I don't know if I have like a too big of a following to count or whatever, but I stand with the plebs. Lord help me if I'm ever called an influencer.
Yeah, I'm with you. I love the pleb moniker because I know that some of the Bitcoiners dislike it because they're like, oh, you shouldn't be like self-demeaning. But to me, it's just like, come on. I mean, it puts everyone on the same level in a fun way, I think. I really do enjoy it as well.
Yeah, if you're meaning it in an actual self-demeaning way, then that's going to be a problem. But I, like I said, from a meme point of view, I think of it more as, you know, the staying humble part of staying humble and stacking sats.
Exactly.
Because it's recognizing, it's like, you can't speak for this thing, and you just have to, you have to embrace reality as it is. And the reality is, you know, we're just dudes trying to figure things out. And, yeah.
It's clearly so playful, and it's bringing people together in a fun way, which I think is cool.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, there's always going to be an issue with outsiders, you know, just the in-group and out-group and the different language that we use to communicate with one another, and it can be confusing and strange to others. But that's also why there's a division of labor, where you can have the person who maybe isn't as much of a lunatic as us, but can, you know, just explain. It's like, hey, here's what they're actually trying to say. I'll tell you it in the sort of you know, big boy way, you know, what they actually mean. You know, yeah, so I think it's very important. And with that, you know, I celebrate the fact that we have a culture of intellectual openness, in a way that just we've been lacking in our society for many decades now. So to see a return of that is great. And I also hope that, you know, over time, we, you know, even take it seriously, so that we're not just kind of spraying out, you know, different what ifs and such, you know, dorm room philosophy type of things, but actually finding ourselves putting in the work to really understand what we're dealing with, because we do need to rebuild, you know, an understanding of, you know, the food pyramid might be bunk, but what do we replace that with? How do we, once again, this goes back to like, how do we create that positive vision? It's like, there's a lot of bricks that need to be laid to build a new foundation for us to develop these ideas and be able to pass them on. It shouldn't be the case that every generation has to come and relearn everything. Even being someone who's like, oh, I like to go down rabbit holes. It's like, I do too, because I'm a curious person. But there's also a limit to what we can do. You know, there's a need for humility there as well. It's like, I have how many years on this earth, and even that is uncertain. And so you only have so much time. It takes how much time to get a grasp of anything. You're never going to be able to cover everything, so you're always going to be in need of working with others to learn things and understand things. And you know, I don't know how to fly a plane, but, and yet I get onto an airplane and let them fly me. So I think we do have to come to grips with those limits. I think that's probably something important for people to consider as well. Which is also, I don't want to shame the normie too much, because like in some sense, I do think that they have been beaten into much lower agency people than they otherwise should be. But we also shouldn't expect everyone to want to get PhDs in literally every single topic you can imagine. People also can want to live a life, and they should be able to just live a life. And one of the reasons that I'm into Bitcoin is because you can just put your money under a mattress, you know, in cold storage somewhere, and not have to think about all of this stuff, and just live a good life. So, you know, that's another way that, you know, kind of balance these different things. I think there's, you know, a virtuous mean to a lot of these different concepts, and you know, it'll take us time to find where all those means are. But at present moment, I think that the sort of Bitcoin pleb mindset, insofar as it might be erring, it tends to err on the side that I think it should be erring on.
Yeah, it's like we're taking the subject of ascending away from fiat money very seriously without taking ourselves too seriously, I think is what it comes down to. It's like a morale boosting community vibe. And I definitely agree with you that I think, well, I am quite confident we're going to a place where I think we could mostly agree is we don't think that Bitcoin's always going to be this crazy community phenomenon where everyone's obsessed about it and making podcasts about it in the future. It's just going to be money. It's just yes. going to be the underlying foundation of everything. It's going to be, you know, like there aren't.
Imagine if we had a dollar podcast.
Yeah.
You just like get on. Sure, I just love the green tint. They just came out with a new security strip inside of it. If you hold it up to the light, you can see it. Let's talk about that for an hour. You know, it'd be a very strange podcast network.
And equally, I know Saifedean has used this example before, just like the plumbing under our house. You know, that's like foundational to us now. It's like there aren't podcasts about plumbing or these conferences celebrating plumbing because it's just foundational. So I think, in the future, when Bitcoin is just foundational money, it will be at a point where, you know, our era that we're in right now, we've done our job, we've set the foundation so the future can be more prosperous. And yes. I think that is the best goal any of us can strive for right now at this period in the timeline.
Yes. And I think you would agree with me here, based on, you know, the websites that you operate and the websites that I operate, also have a feeling of, you know, once we've gone down rabbit holes, what can we do to take the information, the good information, so you can skip all the junk, because there's a lot of just trash that you have to dig through on the internet when you're learning about any kind of topic, but bring out the gems and have them set out nicely so that when new people, but also, you know, including next generations come, they have that ready for them, so that you've done the hard work for them so that they can learn and then go on to do even greater things. They're not burdened by having to sit around and figure this stuff out. They can just go and do, you know, better things with their time. So, you know, it's, you know, we, you know, it's like, you know, you walk so they can run, you know, and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
I think that's important. That's what motivates me with the work that I do, is wanting to be able to have this stuff in place so that you know, when the next generations are ready to learn what is Bitcoin, they have somewhere that they can go to answer these questions, like why are there only 21 million Bitcoin? Why do people run their own nodes? What's the importance of a node? Why do people hold their own keys, and so on and so forth? These questions are questions that will always be with us, because there will always be a new person who has to learn them, and it's important to be able to answer those forever. So, you know, when we go down these rabbit holes, this is kind of where I was saying, you know, take it seriously and try to actually bring out the gems of knowledge and you know, get them ready for the next generation to, you know, so they can just learn it the first time. I mean, imagine how much different our lives would be if we had just picked up all of this stuff in high school. And then when we got out of high school or whatever, we could just, you know, go do stuff because we didn't have to sit and relearn.
This crazy idea of just doing stuff that you want to, you know?
Yeah. And there's always like, you know, bigger things to be done. There's always like a new frontier of science to do, but you have to get caught up in order to get there. Anyone who's listening, you know, if you've gone down rabbit holes, things that are interesting, I do really recommend that you take seriously the idea of, you know, really collecting it into something, you know, you can imagine passing on to other people, you know, whether it's the form of a book or a website or whatever, something that actually doesn't just make it an ephemeral you know, curiosity, but something that actually helps reestablish good knowledge in the world.
I could not agree more with all of that. That's so beautifully put, because you and I do sort of feel that same niche of just trying to, as we take in the information, I'm always thinking about how can I create something that will be able to help a new, like, spider webbing out of different types of people and just like make things easier for them, because we all stand on the shoulders of giants. There are so many people out there that will reference the Nakamoto Institute or the Bitcoin Standard as their starting point.
Yes.
And, you know, it spawns all these new people that are now interested in this thing and see the light and want to help others. And this is the beauty of the network effect. It's happening in front of our very eyes, and it's so exciting to watch. And yeah. In a world full of garbage, the garbage filters are important. So we need to give ourselves a pat on the back, the people that do the dirty work, and figure out what does the world really, or what is our take? You know, everyone has a different individual take of, you know, what do we think is important for people to really understand? And I think that, you know, those types of people should not discount themselves and just get out there. And, you know, like me, I'm an expert in absolutely nothing. But starting a podcast just seems like, you know, I've always just asked questions about everything. Like, why not try this? And I've gotten so many messages from people saying, thank you for, you know, bringing on these guests and like filling my brain with knowledge. You don't have to be super smart to help others. You know, we all just want to help each other. And there are infinite ways that we can do that. And Bitcoin enables us to choose a path we want to.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, there's, I think Hayek called them, you know, secondhand dealers of information. And that's not pejorative, far from it, I would say, which is, you know, there's an art to popularizing ideas as well. So, you know, there's a lot of ideas that are, you know, you can learn if you are willing to go open up dusty 900 page tomes, and read all of those. But the lessons in them that are applicable to most people, more people, you know, might be able to be brought down to a really like high quality Twitter thread or podcast episode. And being someone who can take that information and really synthesize it into something easier to digest without losing the goodness and the depth, that is a real skill. And I agree, like it doesn't take an expert to be able to do that. I think that it just requires, you know, the humility of knowing is like, what is your role here? What specifically, you know, you don't want to get like too big to, you know, for your britches if you're just, you know, maybe kind of sharing other people's information. You have to, you know, remember it's like, okay, well, like, you know, I'm getting ideas from other people and I'm just communicating them. You know, some people who find themselves in that position start to think of themselves as, you know, brilliant or something, and that can end, you know, in funny ways. But you know, we all play a sort of division of labor in the production of knowledge, and so I think there's roles for everyone, because there's also a lot of people. The people who actually wrote the 900 page tomes, they weren't necessarily people who could communicate that to an ordinary layman who would benefit from that information. And so they need popularizers to be able to take that information and get it out to others. And so whatever your level is, different people have different skills or whatever, you know, find that thing but just, you know, take it seriously. You know, we also live in such a cool time where, on the downside, you know, the downside is that we live in a time where it's like, I don't believe anything anymore. You know, it's like, everything's a lie, you know, and everyone's like a conspiracy theorist now. It's like, well, maybe the conspiracy theories are even right. Like, you know, it's a very strange time where, people believe in nothing and they'll also believe in anything. And it's kind of a strange, dangerous time. But on the other hand, there's like no better time for the person who can communicate important ideas. whether they are just, you know, a guy who shows off the work of others, whether he's like a popularizer that helps synthesize things for a bigger popular audience, or someone who's working on deeper stuff. We've never had a better time for being able to find an audience for those. And, you know, you can find so many great Twitter accounts that they, you know, they zero in on the one thing, the way that we get into Bitcoin, but they get into, you know, whether it's art or architecture or music or, you know, some field of science or whatever it might be. And they get really into it, and they're able to just put out these threads that just, they get people's minds going. And you know, there's been so many times where I, you know, how many of us, like, the reason we went down a rabbit hole was because we saw one compelling tweet or thread or post or whatever, on that topic that just blew our mind and made us want to learn more. And so there's so much opportunity for everyone, to be engaged in this sort of great dialogue. And like I said, my recommendation is just to try to keep your head on straight and be focused on the truth, and you know, be mindful of others. I was joking earlier about, like, you know, being antagonistic and such, but you know, that's not always a good idea. And so be very mindful of your audience, and you know, with that kind of humility and charity and such, you know, everyone can really play an amazing role in helping rebuild a better financial system, as well as all the different things that touches, and all of the different, you know, all the stuff that we've mentioned prior. So I think it's an amazing time to be alive. I can't imagine too many time periods truly being more fun than this one. So
couldn't agree more. Couldn't agree more. Real quick, I know this was the time I scheduled to. Are you flexible? You have to run.
I can keep talking.
Okay, sweet.
If you had something more.
Yeah, I'd like to pivot to just looking at the future, because you mentioned way earlier in the beginning of your story, which I find hilarious, because this is one of the things that pretty much everyone consistently feels, is that we are too late to Bitcoin when we hear about it, because we have those memories in our brain of, oh, like, I heard it, you know, a few years ago from that weird friend, or I heard it this time and I thought it was a scam. And now I'm, you know, finally looking at it a few years later, it's more expensive in fiat terms, and I think, oh man, I should have got it when I was early, and I just don't get it. And so people just stop themselves from doing it. And so I think a good way to look at this in a more long-term perspective is to look at what lies ahead for Bitcoin, and especially since we just crossed into the new year. We're starting 2025. What would you say to these people who think they are too late to Bitcoin? And maybe you could also just weave in your predictions for what you see for the next 5, 10, 20 years that can help paint the picture for why we are indeed still extremely early to this thing.
Yeah. I was laughing when you said the weird friend. I was like, that's me. I feel seen.
That's all of us now.
Everyone, I just thinking of a tweet every Thanksgiving. I love, you know, tweeting about how everyone needs to get their Thanksgiving presentation put together, because everyone always wants to be, they want to, like, feel bad for being, like, into Bitcoin. It's like embarrassing or something. And you know, I say lean into it. You know, don't be annoying, but, you know, learn to be charming and go be charming with Bitcoin. People need to hear this stuff. It's super important. And this year, my tweet was something like, you know, the theme for your presentation this year should be, you are not too late. because that's just, I think in fact, at 100,000, I guess we're slightly below it while we're recording, but at 100,000, to many people, because it's such a big number, and it's insane, it feels like it's almost this like ending of, like, oh, we've, yeah, see, Bitcoin's this. And, you know, we're used to thinking like, oh, I remember when it was 1,000 or, you know, whatever. That's a huge amount of growth. I think the thing that people need to understand is that Bitcoin is still ultimately very small relative to the economy as a whole. It is, that being said, it is already one of the biggest currencies. You know, if you look up the number, I think it's anywhere from like the 7th to 13th largest, you know, money in the world. So that's pretty incredible. So that's big, but money operates on power laws. So in terms of the entire economy, I mean, Bitcoin is still like a tenth of the size of gold. And so if you think that, if you can wrap your head around just, oh, Bitcoin is digital gold, and you can think of Bitcoin as just a thing that should be like on par with gold, that would be a very bearish statement to me, because I think Bitcoin is so much more than just gold. It's far more than just gold. However, even if you just think that, you can think in your mind, it's like, okay, well, that's another 10x. And it's like, okay, well, if you can come to think that Bitcoin is something more than gold, okay, how about another 100x? And once you're getting there, you're talking 10 million. And now you're talking, is like, you're a sizable, you know, you are a juggernaut in the global economy. And, you know, we could sort of debate, you know, what would be the sort of end state of like, where would the equilibrium find itself? But I think it's safe to say that Bitcoin certainly has a sort of like 100x potential or more, you know, and, you know, 100x to, you know, I guess 500x if you're talking, you know, Michael Saylor's bullish case for 2045 or whatever, you know, that would be like a 500x from here. So it's like you have 100 to 500x as like a potential room for growth. Where it's going to land from 0x to 500x or maybe even a negative x, you know, that depends on your view of Bitcoin. But if you already have a positive outlook for Bitcoin, those are the ranges you have to do, and you need to have your mind open to you know, managing expectations, not in the sense of like, maybe it won't go up anymore, but that it actually can go up theoretically, you know, 500x or something like that. And so there is, you know, we really are still very early, and we just sort of have to, you know, just think through how big is money. Money is a very, very big thing, and especially when you're talking about global money, and especially when you're looking at well, what is the role of money, and is it possible that there are a lot of goods in the world that we overvalue to make up for the fact that we have bad money? So maybe people overvalue real estate as their savings accounts because they can't just have a savings account with proper money in it. Maybe they feel that way about certain stocks. Maybe they feel that way about bonds. Maybe they feel that way about art, and so on and so forth. And you can just go down this list. And so it's like, well, what kind of things have a monetary premium that only exists because they're trying to escape fiat? And if fiat is not there anymore, all of that can get sucked up by Bitcoin potentially. So this all opens up just a big possibility. And my view of, you know, 5, 10, 20 years from now, I don't know that I want to, you know, make a prediction on the certain rate. The one time I did that, I got burned, at least on a sort of, you know, meme level. You know, it did not happen the way that I thought it was going to happen. So, you know, I'm hesitant to make like very specific predictions like that. But I am extremely bullish on all of those timeframes. I think Bitcoin will continue to grow on all of those timeframes, because I think Bitcoin will grow forever, because even when it reaches equilibrium, as people keep producing things, that means the value, the purchasing power of each Bitcoin is going to continue to increase because there will be more goods in the economy to price them against, while the Bitcoin supply will remain finite. So I think Bitcoin will always be growing. And especially in the short, medium, and long run, I think in the short run, because for one, I think that, you know, I do think that there are halving cycles still. And so there's sort of natural hype cycles that happen around that. I think there's lots of tailwinds from the markets. We're seeing the ETFs. I know a lot of Bitcoiners have hesitancy about the ETFs, and I don't recommend that people buy ETFs when they don't need to. That meaning, like, you know, if you have money in a retirement account or something where an ETF is the only way to get Bitcoin exposure, then by all means, that makes sense. But otherwise, I would recommend people look into just buying regular Bitcoin, real Bitcoin, Bitcoin they can verify with their node. But in any case, I mean, that is a huge, there's clearly such a huge market demand for that. And there is obviously so much money tied up in fiat accounts all around the world that need that release valve. And we're seeing that. The ETFs have really just demonstrated what an incredible amount of growth. We see the corporate strategies effectively running speculative attacks on the dollar, but effectively finding ways to increase their Bitcoin holdings as a way to improve the treasury positions of their companies, which is great for shareholders. So that's a huge tailwind. And then politically, at least in the United States, there seems to be, you know, I don't want to say things are perfect, but things are way better than where they could have been. So, you know, I think, you know, right now the discussion is, should the government be buying a million Bitcoin, more than that, less than that, something like that? Much more so than should we throw Bitcoiners in jail? Which, yeah, I tend to see as a good thing. Now, there's obviously still cases dealing with that, and people should go look into those. In terms of a broad threat against Bitcoiners, the steam in the sort of anti-crypto army has really been taken away, whereas we're seeing a lot more pro-Bitcoin attitudes that you know, will hopefully also lead to you know, much more recognition of the importance of protecting Bitcoiner rights in the United States, the right to use the money that you would like, the right to run your own node, hold your own keys, et cetera, et cetera. The political situation, even if you don't think it's you know, the greatest or anything, and I wouldn't blame you, it would be hard to make the argument that we are worse off today than we were you know, some amount of time ago. So those are all great short-term tailwinds. And then any of those, like, as Bitcoin grows, that's necessarily like a better tailwind for the medium term, because the way that number go up technology works is number go up begets number go up. As a good becomes more marketable and more liquid, it becomes more desirable as a medium of exchange and store of value and all of that. And so it's a positive feedback loop. And so if Bitcoin is growing, then you have reason to expect it to continue to grow. So if I think it's going to grow in the next 5 years, well, then I would expect it to grow in the next 10 years. And if I think it's going to grow in the next 10 years, then yeah, I should think it's going to grow in the next 20 years. And at that point, there's no natural stopping point. It's the only natural stopping point is for the entire global monetary base to be based on Bitcoin, at which point Bitcoin growth would be slowed down to whatever the growth of the economy itself is. So Yeah, my
long term money always should have been in the first place.
Yes, and my long term view of Bitcoin has basically not changed since I really came to understand it, which is I believe Bitcoin will become the global reserve currency, and that will have extremely positive effects on all of our economic lives. And there are many ways in which it extends well beyond that because of the ways that fiat money has plagued our society and culture. So I have nothing but bullish things to say about the next any amount of years ahead. I am very much looking forward to the future.
Yeah, dude, we had to give the Boltard persona a mic for a minute there. I appreciate that. I love it. I completely agree with all that, and so excited for the future. It's just so many things are being brought together in a positive way right now. I couldn't be more excited, and I am extremely stoked to have people like you out there creating this awesome content to help more and more people learn about this awesome asset and how it changes the world. And yeah, man, you're a legend for all the work you've done. Really appreciate it. And just to wrap things up here, where can people go find you and learn more about your work to follow in those same footsteps that I did?
People can find me on Twitter at Bitstein. I'm also at Noster. I'll keep from laying out my whole NPub. That'd be kind of a boring, you can find me at NPub, you know, 1, 2, 3, you know, and so on. But I think, if you go to primal.net/Bitstein, you'll be able to find me. I don't necessarily, I'm honestly more of a Twitter guy. And the reason, or X, I guess it's X now, Elon has sort of won that over, but, and the reason is because most of why I get on is to be making global statements. You know, I'm trying to make comments that it's like I want the world to see what I have to say about Bitcoin. So because that's where all the people are, that's where I tend to be. But I do have Noster, and I welcome you to follow me there. And then you can find the Satoshi Nakamoto Institute at nakamotoinstitute.org. Since you're listening to the Ben Wehrman podcast, you're probably also very interested in Meet, in which case you can go to a website. I haven't updated it in a very long time, but I think it's still timeless. Holds up. So I have a website called Just Meet. It's at justmeet.co, and it has a lot of the links made up the rabbit hole that I went down many years ago when I was learning about carnivore and zero carb diets and all of that. So I think your listeners would really like that.
Basically, for people listening, this guy went through all these rabbit holes years before I did and made the OG websites that I am now like making my own version of. Like your justmeet.co was definitely an inspiration for, like, I made whycarnivore.com, which is a similar idea of just collecting these resources, trying to give people an easier path.
Yes.
And so thankful for you making that stuff, man. It stand on the shoulders of giants, like we all say, as you did as well. You know, it's a process. We all just got to take the information that's out there and continue building with it. And it's crazy to think what we're going to be seeing in the coming years as this continues to progress and more people join the ecosystem. And I'm a little bit more hyper bullish on Nasha than you. I think that before not long there's going to be a global conversation there. It does feel like a big Bitcoin meetup a little bit still, you know. It's still the early days.
I'm not bearish on Noster. I'm just saying, like, at this moment you'll find me on X, because if I can have there's just much more, there is more of that global conversation to have fun with. I do like reading Noster. I'm more of a Noster reader, but I post to X.
Excellent.
I'm probably on X more reading, but you know what I mean. I do read Noster.
It's still the main. You haven't made the full transition yet.
Don't tell Odell. I mean, he knows. He sees it.
But you're like halfway between Parker and Odell. Those are like that's the spectrum. I know the Parker yes, and Lewis. We've yes. been working on him forever. He just won't make the jump.
I think that's right. I'm probably in between. I did make my first Noster bot, so that was fun. Okay. Odell got me to do that. So, you know, I am plugged in. You know, hopefully we'll see. I'd love to see the Noster community grow and even grow beyond Bitcoiners. But we shall see. I'm just bullish on it all.
Yes, man. Bullish on everything. That is the vibe of the day that we're taking with this one. Bitstein, has been a huge pleasure talking to you, sir. Thank you for taking the time. And I didn't even get to any of the actual articles you've written that have spoken to me. I have them all over my notes. So we will have to keep the door open for a future conversation. There's so much more to talk about.
That would be great. Yeah, I'd love to.